My dad joined Starfleet because he believed in it. I joined on a dare.
You joined to see if you could live up to him. You spent all this time trying to be your dad. And now you're wondering what it means to be you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of the Shuttlepod Podcast. Today is Wednesday, July 20th, and we have just come out of the Star Trek Beyond IMAX world premiere at San Diego Comic-Con. I am Kaylee Iacovino, and I am joined by...
Lori Elster.
And I'm Andy Britton.
Lori is a new writer for the site. You may have seen some of her articles lately. Andy has been working for us as a photographer for quite a while, and the three of us are going to share our thoughts today on Star Trek Beyond, just get some of our very first initial impressions. We literally just walked out of the screening. So, guys, what did you think?
I thought it really did feel like a nice prolonged episode, but with gorgeous big-budget special effects, just overall.
And I thought it was really fun. I thought the fast-paced action was on par with Justin Lin's previous films. And it had a lot of great crew moments, really emotional moments.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought it did encapsulate a lot of what we love about the original series. It definitely was a blockbuster summer film, which, you know, they kind of have to do if they want to sell Star Trek as a film franchise. So I can appreciate that. But I felt like it captured, for me, the feel of Star Trek more than the previous two films have. I don't know if you guys will agree with that, but I thought for me, this is, I would probably rank it pretty highly in terms of the reboot films.
Yeah, I would say it's my favorite of the three. And I would say that we got a sense of these characters and why they care about each other in a way that we haven't necessarily gotten in the other ones. And then in terms of the blockbuster part, the effects were actually really beautiful and worth appreciating on an IMAX screen if you can get to one, for sure.
Yeah, that's very true. I also like to just bring up the event in general that we were at a very special screening. So it's the world premiere of the IMAX film on this gorgeous outdoor IMAX screen. And a live orchestra was there performing all of the music, which was incredible. That was scored by Michael Giacchino. That was incredible. And at the beginning of the film, they opened with the orchestra playing some music, and they had an awesome light show and more fireworks than I think I've ever seen in my life.
That part was really incredible. And then even as we got to the end, I kept looking up and realizing that we were watching a new Star Trek movie under the stars, which was quite an experience, and under the planets as well.
Yes, Saturn and Mars were out to our south, and I just wanted to point out there was a choir hidden behind black curtains as well, behind the screen, and they were excellent.
Yeah, the orchestra and the choir were just incredible. A really cool way to see the movie. I think, though, I would like to see it again in a theater. Like, I feel like there were some moments in the film that went by really fast, that I would like to see it again so I can kind of appreciate those better and maybe more of a traditional, in a place where I'm sort of less distracted by my surroundings.
Right, and I would also say there are audio issues when you're watching something that big in a big place, so there were moments where I couldn't quite make out what people were articulating, but all the main characters, I could tell everything that they said. Whenever anyone had funny teeth or an alien head, it got a little challenging.
Yeah, sometimes the sound seemed a bit off with the dialogue, just like the timing.
Oh, wow, really? I didn't even notice.
Just sound was traveling pretty slowly.
Huh, interesting. Yeah, but overall, though, I think incredible experience. Would recommend this kind of thing to anyone.
Yeah, I actually wouldn't trade it for anything. It was incredible.
Yeah, and that sound was, of course, not inherent to the film. It was just part of the environment
the
that we were subjected
thing.
To. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so far we haven't really talked any spoilers. These are just kind of our general thoughts, but I'm going to go ahead and call it here and say that from this point forward, we're going to talk about plot points and everything in total spoilers. So anyone trying to stay pure before they see the film, tune out now.
Yeah, spoilers. Can we flash that on the screen?
Yeah. You can make the sound if you want.
We'll do a red alert sound. All right, so favorite moments, least favorite moments?
I mean, I had a lot of great moments, but but it's easier for me to do least favorite first.
Sure,
and
yeah, yeah.
For me, least favorite is lots of punching, which I feel is very non-Star Trek, is not needed in a Star Trek movie, and I think all the reboots are pretty guilty of it, of doing lots and lots of punching scenes, and not just one big, you know, the old show, sometimes Kirk would have to go punch somebody for a little while, but I feel
but
like
it'd
in
be
these,
like one punch.
Right.
It'd be like the 1960s, you know, hit
right.
to the jaw
right.
and then they're down.
Or he'd do what we called the Kirk move, where he'd be on his back and then he'd kick someone with his feet and then he'd flip back up again, which we called
yeah.
the Kirk move for my whole childhood. But there were at least three solid, relentless punching scenes.
Yeah, and it reminded me of that scene in Into Darkness towards the end where
See?
Spock is like basically pummeling Khan to death, which made no sense for me, not only in the context of Star Trek, but in the context of his character. Like, Spock would never kill someone by punching them.
Except he does have a rage that we've tapped into from time to time that's like the blood fever kind of rage. That will bring
true.
That out in him when he's driven to a certain point, because that's supposed to be the primal thing about Vulcans.
Yeah.
Like,
I just feel like he would like maybe strangle someone or something
yeah.
instead of punching them to a bloody pulp. Yeah, I tend to agree that
yeah.
there was another moment too that we talked about before that I also felt the same way about, which is there's a moment when Kirk says, let's make sure we stop the weapon and that Krall is dead.
Right. I was going to say that
yeah.
same thing. I was going to say that same thing. Kirk should be above that. I know he went through hell before that point, and he's kind of justified, but Starfleet is above that.
Yeah.
It should have been about bringing him to justice.
I agree 100%. I felt like it was very un-Starfleet of him to say, let's make sure this guy is dead. How about, like, let's make sure we've stopped him? And, you know, I mean, and I know maybe it's hokey of me to think this, but I feel like you should, you know, it's like watching a Superman film. Like, Superman doesn't kill people, even if they're horrible and evil, like, he'll have them arrested, which is, like, that's how what Star Trek is like, too. And, yeah.
That's part of the reason that we like it in the first place.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that special, we're sort of above it all, we've evolved past vengeance.
Right, even if the person is so horrible that as an audience member you want to see them die, you know, your main character is, like, being a role model to you and saying, no, they don't deserve to die, but they need to be stopped. And that, yeah, I wish that had come through a little more.
Or that could have been a moment where another character spoke up and said something. That
totally.
Was an opportunity.
This could be another argument, but perhaps some will have the argument that that's more of what Picard would do, and Kirk is not that type of hero yet.
I guess you could make that argument, but Kirk is a bit more, like, roguish and whatever, but I still don't see him wishing someone dead.
And in fact, if you look at other movies, like, it's in The Undiscovered Country where he recognizes that in himself, where he's irrational and so angry that he does want them dead, and that's a shock. That's a change
yeah.
in his character at that moment. I know this is a different Kirk, Kelvin timeline, all that stuff, but the basic roots of the character are supposed to be the same.
Yeah, you have a great point, Laurie. I completely agree with you.
Yeah. And I just want to, shifting gears a little bit, can I mention how awesome of a job that the film did in honoring Leonard Nimoy?
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. Like, you've sort of felt his presence on and off throughout the whole thing in a deeply emotional way.
Well, I think Zachary Quinto really showed his own personal emotions when he was sitting next to Bones.
Yeah, when he told Admiral Spock had died.
Right.
Ambassador Spock had died.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like, because he actually sheds a tear in that scene, and I'm like, I'm sure that that's Zachary Quinto shedding a tear for Leonard Nimoy.
But, which I thought too, which took me out of the movie for a moment, because
yeah.
then I was watching Zachary Quinto instead. But I like Zachary Quinto, so it was okay.
Yeah, those real life current events can do that.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I personally really liked that, because despite the fact that it pulled me out of that story, it's still, like, it made me feel a very strong emotion, and I, you know, I could see that the tear that he was shedding was genuine, and that made me, that moved me to feel something, so I liked the moment. I'm glad that it made me think of Leonard Nimoy.
And the movie has a poignance to it anyway, because of Anton. Like, it just is... it's going to have that as you're watching it. You're going to feel that emotion and be aware of that while you're watching it anyway. So to heighten the emotional beats, I thought they did a really good job of that throughout the movie.
If we want to go back to some personal favorite moments, if you do want to like some punching and kicking, I think Jayla kicked ass.
Yeah, totally.
She was a great, strong female character.
Yeah, can we talk about the females for a minute here?
She's maybe one of the best female characters they've ever had in the franchise.
I agree, 100%. I think it's a shame that Uhura didn't get to shine as much as I hoped she would in this
She
film.
Did do some punching.
She did carry her own and throw some people over a kind of like a walk catway.
Like a railing, yeah. Right. Yeah, no, she had some awesome kick-ass moments, but they were too brief, and they weren't, you know, they weren't like plot moving moments. They were just like, everyone's punching and he's punching and she's punching. And then Uhura punched a guy and that was awesome. And then you moved on. You know, it wasn't like Jayla had this strong presence throughout and we got to see her character develop through the story. You know, she starts out at the beginning of the movie very much like, I just want to get off this planet. There's no way. She said, I'm not going back to that death place, meaning Kral's like headquarters. And then because of the death of her father and her family, her whole family was killed by Kral. And, you know, Kirk and Scotty convince her to you know, be brave and be strong and help us because you're now a part of our team. And so you get to see this whole progression of her character. And she lends so much to the plot. Like, without them, there's no way. Without her, there's no way they could have ever succeeded.
One thing I think Uhura did do well is she used her communication and she used her skills in that regard to speak and try to understand and get information out of Kral and what was going on and why they were in this situation. So she seemed also very perceptive that way.
Yeah, that's true. And the moment where she realizes who Kral is, she realizes that Kral is the captain of the
USS
of
Franklin.
The Franklin. I feel like they picked her for that moment because she's the communications officer. She has special skills with language, and she could hear it in his voice. Because you see her replaying that clip over and over from the ship's logs, and she kind of slows it down, and the voice changes a bit. Like she heard something in his voice and was like, I know that voice. So I thought that was cool, and then she helped Captain Kirk realize that.
Right, like she played it a bunch of times so that he could then come to that smart realization.
Yeah, and the audience as well. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That was almost a kind of like an eerie scene, though, as well. It was dark, and you didn't know who was going to come over her shoulder during that scene, I felt like.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think they wanted it to be tense because they're like, oh, wait, like, shit, this is important.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something in this log. Like, this is about to be a big reveal.
Right.
But I thought it was well done, unlike, in my personal opinion, the reveal of Benedict Cumberbatch's character being Khan. The reveal that John Harrison was Khan, I thought was, like, totally just didn't hit the right beats in that scene. It was very, like, at this big reveal moment, and there was a swell in the music and everything, and everyone's like, wait, who? Like, we were never supposed to have heard of you before. This doesn't make sense. But, like, in the way they did this reveal, I thought was...
It was better.
Was well executed, yeah.
Well, it also wasn't someone that we were as familiar with.
For sure.
Because Khan comes with the Ricardo Montalban.
Oh,
prestige,
for sure.
So that, and the whitewashing of Khan is a little challenging.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, the reveal in Star Trek Beyond felt a little bit more like previous, some other good sci-fi movies. It reminded me of that, or even some, like, thrilling movies. Just, you're having this message of the past be the reveal. So it reminded me of some other good sci-fi.
And I also think if you're sort of new to the Star Trek world and you're watching it, it's enough of a reveal to be a good story without having to really have any background. It still works.
Totally.
Whereas Khan doesn't work if you don't know who he is.
Exactly.
Yeah, this movie wasn't trying to be something it wasn't.
It wasn't trying too much to pander to the fans. They really tried to make a movie, I feel like, that was inclusive in all senses of the word. That's definitely, I would take my non-Trekkie friends to this movie.
And speaking of inclusive, I loved seeing so many different aliens on the crew. Yep. Like, not just at the space station, but in all these random positions on the crew, because that's been a long time coming.
And I forget the name of the character, Ensign something, Ensign Sue or something like that, from the beginning, who hides the device in like, the back of her head. That was cool. And I love how, you know, I was, about 10 minutes after that scene where Captain Kirk pulls her aside, it's like, Ensign Sue, or whatever her name is, I forget. Yeah. I need your help. And then we never figure out, we never see, like, for a while, they don't show what he was asking her for help with. And I'm like, oh, she has the device. But I didn't know it was going to be in the back of her head. That was pretty sweet.
Yeah, her alien face hugger type.
Yeah, her, like, face hugger head. Yeah.
But I did know that that first alien who came and told them she needed help, I knew she was bad. I knew she was lying the minute she started. I was like, this one is not telling the truth.
I knew that she knew that they would be attacked by the swarm ship. I guess I wasn't sure that she was working with Krall. I thought maybe she could be telling the truth, that she was just trying to do what was right by her crew, and she was really stranded there as well. Like, I thought that could be possible, but yeah.
Speaking of the swarm ships, I thought the swarm ships were actually really great. Like, they were super terrifying, incredibly intense, and they left all these spiky bits all over the ship that just made it look angry, jarring, and scary.
It seems like there were maybe two types of swarm ship, or they're used in two different ways. Like, because I noticed some of them would just tear through the ship, and some of them would implant themselves in the ship, and then the characters could board the Enterprise. But then they could get back onto those ships and take off again. We saw a couple of those, like, spiky things sticking out of the ship, then disengage and fly off somewhere.
Yeah, it seemed like some of the ships were crewed and some were uncrewed.
Yeah, were they, though?
Without people.
I mean, were they? Because we never saw an uncrewed ship, so were these all just a bunch of kamikaze pilots? And how did they have so many pilots in general?
Well, that's why I think some of them were just basically drones.
Yeah, I think
because
they have to be, yeah.
They reminded me a little of Borg being told to sleep, like, let's find that weird, quirky side way to get in and stop them. And when Data got them all to sleep in that very famous Next Generation episode, I felt like this was kind of a similar, like, let's sneak in some way they wouldn't expect and shut them all down at once.
Yeah, and of course, I was okay with the idea of, like, let's emit a high-frequency pulse. It was kind of lame when he's like, oh, VHF, radio.
Yeah.
That was kind of a lame line. But okay, I'm okay with them, like, emitting some kind of frequency to scramble their sensors. Fine. The fact that they had to also play the music over their own speakers, and that had to be music, like, it couldn't just be some, like, high-pitched pulse that they emit. Also, sound doesn't travel through space.
Also, now we have to discuss the music, because this is my biggest complaint.
Yeah, let's do it. Go ahead.
So, I personally, hate me if you will, condemn me if you must, I hate the Beastie Boys, and I always have. When they first invaded Star Trek, I was very upset, as you can imagine. I've also spent many years working in at music television stations where it is heresy to not like the Beastie Boys. So I put up with a lot of flack for hating the Beastie Boys and for being a Star Trek fan. Then the Beastie Boys get into every Star Trek movie, and then here they were again, and it made me really mad, and I don't ever want to hear them again.
See, I don't hate the Beastie Boys, because, like, I'm not a huge fan or anything, but, like, I'll listen to the music and sing along because it's fun and crazy and absurd, and I like the absurdity of it, but I never thought it fit in a Star Trek movie. I actually wasn't that opposed to it in 09, because it was brief, and it was, like, this car chase scene and whatever, but the fact, it just felt very wedged in here. Like, it felt like, I wasn't convinced that they needed to play music aloud for people in the ship to hear in order to scramble the sensors of the other. Because they're not emitting it as a sound wave, because sound doesn't travel through space. They're emitting it as a radio wave.
Right.
Right.
So why does it need to be a song at all?
Yeah. Well, maybe Jayla's boombox could only do both or something. Or, who knows?
Yeah, maybe. Okay.
Jayla's boombox. I just have to say that again.
Jayla's, what did she call it? Beat and shouting.
Yeah.
That was a really cute moment, actually.
And
I like
that is an apt description and part of my issue with the Beastie Boys.
I kind of like that it's just a beat and shouting, because it's just like, yeah, this is just crazy and awful, and we love it.
I don't agree.
Yeah, I didn't have a huge issue with the Beastie Boys. I was kind of wondering where they were going with playing the sound and using radio waves as well. And I'm like, oh, well, you could just keep on going and, like, you know, you can have an imagination. But and keep your mind open, but if your mind is too far open, your brain just drops out.
Here's the thing. Radio wave does not equal music. People are confused because we use radio waves to transmit music on Earth. Like, that's what we do. But you can transmit a lot of things, like Wi-Fi.
Right.
Over radio waves. So it's not, it's just a signal. It's just a type of light.
Yeah, at least they didn't use, like, the nacelles as some kind of, like, tuning fork or something. That would not work in space either.
There were a couple other moments that I thought were goofy, and they're just little tiny nitpicky things. There were a couple of science-y things I didn't like, but I'm hard-pressed to remember them at the moment. I do remember one moment I thought was weird, was when Kirk was fighting Krall, and they're flying around in the weird wonky gravity.
Right.
They're just kind of flying around in space with the glass shards. And then Krall uses the current, what did he call it? He called it some kind of super current or something. He's like, he's using the current to get back.
Gravity stream?
Yeah, the slipstream.
Gravity slipstream.
He's using the slipstream to get back to the thing. Okay, fine. But how does Scotty know? Because I think they needed a way to tell the audience what he was doing.
Right.
And so Kirk, like, hopped on his communicator and was like, Scotty, what's going on? He's like, oh, he's using this slipstream, Captain. It's like, how do you fucking know? Like, what? You're off in, like, trying to shut down this giant fan.
Right.
I wasn't distracted by that. I just kind of figured that Scotty was somehow monitoring their, like, both their life signs with scanners and just space station scanners and all that.
There were just a couple of moments like that that pulled me out. I was like, it just seemed goofy, I guess.
Yeah. Like I said, it was kind of Justin Lin, and it was lighthearted action,
right.
And it was fun.
But
yeah,
then there were
true.
Great moments like when Spock and McCoy crash together, and McCoy gets out and he's kind of like bloody and beaten up, and then Spock gets out and he's got like this huge thing stuck in his gut.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was a really good moment, I thought.
Yeah, and you know, McCoy, it was cool that they put Spock in this vulnerable position and McCoy was able to save his life. And that, I feel like that was part of a bonding thing for them.
And I love those two together, and I always have loved those two together,
oh, yeah.
And it was really important to give them those moments.
Yeah, so let's talk a bit about what we knew was going to happen, or what we thought was going to happen.
Oh, before we saw the movie?
Yeah.
I mean, we
oh.
knew they were going to break up into groups, so we knew they were all going to be split up. And we knew with whom.
Yeah, we knew that Spock and McCoy were going to be split off together, and we knew that, you know, everyone was talking about, oh, they're such a great pairing, we get to see the way that they interacted back in TOS.
And Krall has just pretty much the rest of the crew of the Enterprise.
Well,
we kind of knew that.
But,
we
Uhura,
knew they had huge, large numbers.
But Uhura and Sulu were paired, like, we
yeah.
saw pictures of them together, and
yep.
they talked about them being paired up, but they didn't actually have a lot of interactions, just the two of them.
No, they
didn't.
We didn't
see that much of the two of them, and I feel like his character I would have been happy to see more of.
I agree. Totally agree. Sulu did get some awesome moments in the film.
One that got a lot of cheers that made everybody in the audience very happy.
Yep, which was obviously, you're talking about the moment where we meet his husband and daughter.
Yay.
On Yorktown.
Yeah, the audience had a great
like,
applause cheer, for because
it was perfect. It was just like, oh, hey, so good to see you. And you see him walk off. And that was it.
But then when of course, because I knew in my mind that this was happening, and then at the beginning when they're sort of showing daily life aboard the Enterprise, and they show like a couple making out, and then a couple breaking up, I was like, there was another opportunity to throw
another
gay couple in there. Like,
yeah,
I just,
maybe,
I would like to see it become a thing that's not a thing, and the way you do that is you mix it and don't make it abnormal.
Exactly.
Because it's not!
Yeah.
Maybe females, or maybe
interspecies.
Yes.
Interspecies. There is a little bit of green, maybe possibly Orion slave girl.
Oh, that's
with
Chekhov.
Chekhov.
Yeah, that's right. She threw a shirt at him.
And or maybe, you know, two or more people.
Right.
Right. Some variations. That's all we're asking
yeah.
for.
Yeah. Just a couple of orgies. Just two or three. So, yeah, things that we were expecting, and then our reactions to them. Because I had a couple, I mean, we knew a lot going in. I probably knew the most of the three of us going in, just because of all the stuff I've been covering, and I have seen some unfortunate spoilers. So there were a couple of things that I had heard a ton and a ton that I didn't see at all in the film, and there were a lot of things that I saw a ton and a ton that I did see. Things like the way that Sulu's husband mishandled was great. The pairings, Bones and Spock being together, were great. A big one that I was supposed to have seen but didn't was the idea that Krall's character is conflicted in a way that is supposed to make us question the morals of the Federation and question, like, is it really right what we're what the Federation is doing out there? Because obviously Krall thinks the answer is no. But I didn't get that at all.
No, I just got that he was really mad.
Yeah, I got that he was out for revenge. Yeah. That he grew up in a time of war, and he was good at that. And then when the Federation was at peace, he wasn't so good at that anymore. And then he got stranded on a planet and felt like the Federation abandoned him, and so he wanted revenge. Like, that seems like a pretty simple revenge story to me.
Yeah, there didn't seem to be any sort of agenda that made us think about the Federation as some kind of manifest destiny thing.
Not at all.
Yeah, they only, like, try very slightly attempted. It didn't even linger for anyone to, like, just kind of sit on it and really pop into their mind. Maybe we'll see more in, like, an extended version of a Blu-ray.
Maybe. I mean, I like the villain of Krall. I think it was cool. I think the reveal that he was the original Captain of the Franklin was awesome. I thought maybe he looked a little bit too alien. Like, I think they could have toned down the forehead ridges and the back of the head ridges and made him look a little bit more like the what are they called? The stretchy face people in Insurrection.
Oh.
There's the Sona and the Baku.
Yeah.
The Sona are the stretched face people on the planet. Yeah. Like you could see how they like looked like humans that have had their face stretched out, but Krall just looked like a completely different alien, and he had like a weird accent.
There wasn't really a good explanation of that about him switching. Go ahead.
Oh, explanation of how he became
so alien-like.
Yeah, well, they said they found some alien technology that just prolonged his life.
Right. But so why did it kind of make him alien, and then you see him using it again, and that kind of made him more human again?
It like flickered, yeah. I think it was supposed to be revealing that
then,
was.
And
the
then
thing
his
that
ridges
was
got
it.
Smoother again too.
Well, that's because it was wearing off.
Maybe he was controlling it, or maybe
I think it was wearing off.
I think it was wearing off when he looked more human, and when he was at like full strength, it was when he looked the most.
Oh yeah, yeah,
because
he was really weak at the end too.
Right,
when he was mostly human looking.
I just thought of this too. Maybe he was using aliens to prolong his life, and then he started using Starfleet officers to prolong his life, and that's why he started going back to looking more human, based on the host of who he's draining the life force out of.
Oh, I guess that's possible. I didn't think that's a good thought. I think it's probably my thought watching the movie was that it was just the effect of it wearing off, because he seemed to be more weak. He was kind of struggling. It showed him almost limping when you saw just the back of him in the Starfleet tunic. Mm-hmm. So I assumed it was just that the effects of that were wearing off. But that's a really interesting thought.
And I thought his ridges looked awesome, and I thought he looked great. I'm glad he didn't look too human, which I got kind of tired of in some of the Star Trek series.
Oh, which is aliens looking too human. Yeah, yeah.
Because like, actors have to act.
They get a little nose wrinkle, and then that's it. That's the alien disguise.
Actors have to act with their prosthetics and their makeup.
Yeah. The actors are unfortunately all humanoid, so most of the characters are humanoid. Except for, I would like to give a little shout-out to Todd Haberkorn, who is in... We talked on a recent podcast about people who have played in Star Trek fan films who have been in the actual films, and the woman who played the Orion in this movie played Lolani in Star Trek Continues. Todd Haberkorn, who plays Spock in Star Trek Continues, was the voice. He's also a voice actor, and he was the voice of those little dog characters at the very beginning, and the one you see in the tunic at the end. So there's another one to add to that list. So very cool.
Also, I liked all those crazy crawling little weird dog characters.
That was pretty cool.
That was just like, it was exactly, it was dangerous. It was funny.
It was goofy.
Yeah, it was like the right, like you have to have that humor.
Yeah, it had some of that TOS humor that we saw in the 60s.
I do have to say, though, the fact that the one was basically like Keenzer's pet at the end kind of freaked me out. It's like all of a sudden we're domesticating the alien species we come across. I didn't like that.
And they were talking, so they're clearly able to have conversations.
But they like put him in a little, because it made it look like they put him in a little shirt and they like made him his pet. And that, I was like, and people were laughing and cheering, and I was like, what? This actually kind of messed up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if they reached some kind of understanding and became some kind of friends.
He's like, can I have a tunic? Yeah. He's like, can I have a tunic?
Will you leave your people and stay with us?
Yeah. The people who they like accidentally beamed aboard and like apparently didn't send back.
Right. I thought they would send them back.
Yeah. Oh, well.
And I also didn't know why they would be chasing them through the ship. Like, couldn't they just stun them?
Yeah, who knows?
One of the things I liked from the beginning of the film was we got to see that the Enterprise has this big database and this big storage because the Enterprise basically needs to be documenting what they're doing while they're exploring, and I really loved seeing that with some of the scenes with Spock.
And that's kind of part of the HP Enterprise tie-in, Laura, that you did a write-up for. So Hewlett-Packard, HP Enterprise... had a tie-in with the film where they sort of helped them develop some of the technologies that we got to see. Unfortunately, they didn't flesh them out at all in the film. So they weren't like, this is the so-and-so device, and it does blah, blah, blah. We just saw them in use. But it's kind of cool to have that backstory from HP being, like, talking about this device and how they designed it and how it's connected to modern technology and how it's, like, really... Like, this is... Like from their perspective, this is the type of technology that we're moving towards. So it's I like that about Star Trek having a future in terms of the technology and the science that is realistic in terms of the direction we're headed today. So that was cool. I was just going to bring up something else that you... What were you talking about before?
Technology?
Oh, yeah.
Well, the Yorktown. I want to talk about the Yorktown because when the camera started moving and we got to see all these parts of it, I just thought it was breathtaking. I thought it was beautiful. I mean, we're outdoors, giant IMAX screen, there's a symphony orchestra playing, but it's one of those things that if you don't do it well, it's just kind of boring and show-offy, and I thought they did it really, really well, and it was breathtaking.
And they used it. I mean, on the one hand, why would you ever build a space station like that? Like, it's totally impractical. Yeah. Like, having all the roads all different directions and crossing over each other and whatever. But they at least used it in the plot. So I can appreciate that.
And it did have some of the nice comforts of home. You know, I had the ponds and the greenery and the green spaces. And
oh, for sure.
It was a good place to maybe live and have, you know, a daughter like Sulu's husband. And, it's the comforts of home, almost like the Enterprise D.
It was a little crowded.
It was quite crowded, actually.
Yeah, cities.
There was a lot going on. There were, like, kids in a group having some kind of school thing right in the town square or whatever.
Like the Enterprise D.
Right? Yeah, yeah, right. That was always weird. It's like, we're going these really dangerous missions because we're the flagship ship of the Federation, and half of the crews, or half of the complement on the ship is families and children. What Keiko's going to teach a class about botany.
Which I get, because I'm a parent. And I would bring the family.
So I think what we didn't get to see, and we recently talked with John Cho, Aaron Harvey, who also does a podcast for Trek FM, talked to John Cho at the junket in LA last week, and he told us about a scene that was written for the film but was never recorded that would give us more backstory into Sulu's character and his family. And it's where he's talking to Uhura and they're sort of sharing a moment about how Sulu's family is aboard the Yorktown and he's worried for them. And, like, the reason that they moved out there is kind of because of Sulu's job. And he's like, well, I'm kind of out here in space and, like, can you... Like, I want you to be close to me. And he's like, I don't know about bringing the kid. It's, like, dangerous and all this stuff. But Sulu had convinced him, Ben and his daughter, to move out there. And then they did. And Sulu was feeling this guilt because now the Yorktown was going to be attacked. And, I think that would have – I really wish they included that because it would have given Sulu and Uhura more time. It would have given more to his backstory. And it would have strengthened – So, I mean, Ben and Sulu's husband and daughter are in the movie because we needed a reason to, the audience needed a reason to be fearful for the people of the Yorktown. Because otherwise they were just, like, faceless, just a bunch of people. Like, yeah, sure, we should save them, but I'm not that invested in them. Kind of like in Star Trek Generations, there's this whole big thing about how they're trying to save the planets of that system because of the Verdian system, because the ribbon is going to move through and destroy these planets. And then, like, I think we even see the planet get destroyed.
Yeah.
Like, as the ribbon is
coming.
Yes, yeah. And everyone was like, oh, a bunch of people just died, but we've never met them. And it always felt weird to me. So I like that they did that here, but I think giving a bit more backstory and having Sulu be more, like, actively worried, like, have him actually say out loud, like, I'm worried for my husband's safety.
Right. Like, they did give him some moments where you saw his face and there was some intensity there and you got a sense of what was going on, which added to it. But I agree that they could have beefed that up a little bit and it would have given us more with him and Uhura for sure.
So are there any other final thoughts? I mean, these are just our first impressions, so totally haven't really prepared our thoughts for this. It's just totally off the cuff. But were there any other nitpicks you wanted to talk about or favorite moments or just overall thoughts?
My overall thought is that in terms of just being enjoyable from moment to moment, like, I have tickets that I bought a month ago to see it again on Friday, so I'm seeing it again with my sister. And for me, it's still going to be enjoyable because I thought that moment to moment, it was just a really fun movie to watch. And there weren't these long parts where you're like, oh, as soon as this part's over, it gets good again. I just thought it was fun start to finish.
Yeah, overall, I thought it was this, like, I agree with Laurie again. It was positive. It's a good summer film, and it's lighthearted and fun. I would recommend it to friends.
Yeah, I would agree with both of you. The action, you know, I'm not a huge action movie fan, but I love action movies when the action has purpose. Mm-hmm. And I felt like the action in this film drove the plot, so I could get behind it. Even the scene with Kirk riding the space motorcycle. Like, the space motorcycle, like, it could have been any vehicle. But, so the motorcycle part was kind of silly, whatever. But if you can get past the motorcycle, like, there was a point to him being on some kind of vehicle and racing around and causing this distraction. So it wasn't just totally gratuitous. So I appreciated that. So.
I mean, my personal taste is we're in the future. Let's be in the future. And they have this tendency to be like, let's put him in an old car.
Let's have him listen to Beastie Boys.
Right. Let's put him on a motorcycle, which I think is less interesting than putting him on some vehicle that we've never seen before.
Even if it's just like a floaty motorcycle
thing. Yeah. With little wings on the side.
Or something. I have to say, seeing the NX ship was awesome, the Franklin.
Yeah.
And seeing the refit, I'm sorry, not the refit, the A, the Enterprise A.
At the end.
At the end. Was incredible.
I thought it would look a little bit different, more different than the original NCC-1701.
It is pretty similar to the original Kelvin Enterprise.
Yeah, maybe the deflector dish was different, blue, maybe?
The
maybe
shape was a little bit different overall, but
it gave you a rush. It gave you a rush watching that.
I'm glad we got to sort of see it warp off into the sunset at the end. I think that's what a lot of people were hoping for that. I know when we talked about our predictions for the movie, that's what I know Brian was saying, he was really hoping to see that. I would have been happy, I think, with anything sort of warping off into the sunset, but the fact that we do get to see, like, yes, there are going to be more adventures, we're going to see the A now. That was totally awesome. I did think the little time-lapse thing was a little weird, to be honest. They showed, like, a time-lapse of it being built. I kind of get why they did it, but it was, I don't know, it was almost like a how it's made.
I was fine with it.
I thought it was weird. You're allowed to like it, though.
Yeah, I think I liked it in spite of myself.
Yeah.
Like, as you're watching, you're going, this is kind of silly, but I'm really enjoying it. It's like the last episode of Lost. Like, it's satisfying, even though it makes no sense, and you could argue about it. Yeah.
So I'm very satisfied that we got to see the A. That was really nice.
It was satisfying.
Yeah. So overall, great film. Two thumbs up.
Recommend.
Would recommend.
Go see it with a live orchestra and fireworks.
Yeah, if you can. If you can see it with the most intense orchestra and fireworks show ever, and Conan O'Brien, then do that.
And very happy fans in the audience.
All right, well, thanks again, everyone, for joining us. This is Kayla, Lori, and Andy signing off, and we will see you again next week on the Shuttle Pod.